This is the Benson at 100, a podcast from the Nettie Lee Benson Latin American Collection at the University of Texas at Austin. The Benson is one of the world's most storied libraries. During this, our centennial year, we explore the people, archives, and collections that built this library. Learn more at benson100.org. That's benson100.org. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome to our inaugural podcast. I'm Pilar Zazueta. I'm a historian and the Associate Director of Lilas Benson Latin American Studies and Collections at the University of Texas at Austin. Today I'll be speaking with Melissa Guy, Director of the Nettie Lee Benson Latin American Collection here at UT Austin. Welcome, Melissa.
Hi, Pilar. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great. So today I want to talk about Nettie Lee Benson. For people in the Latin American library world and Latin American studies in general, Nettie Lee Benson is legendary. What can you tell us about her and how this world-class collection came to be named after her?
Nettie Lee Benson is indeed legendary, first and foremost for building the most comprehensive Latin American library collection in the Western Hemisphere, if not the world. And by all accounts, she was a force of nature. She certainly had an unconventional career path for a woman of her generation. She was born in the early 1900s in South Texas, where her father ran a produce business, and he employed many Mexicans and Mexican Americans. And Nettie Lee credited that experience of working with and being around her father's business for sparking her own interest in Mexico. And while she was an undergraduate at UT, in 1925, she learned of an opportunity to teach English at a girls' school in Monterrey, so she went. She took off at the age of 20, despite her parents' objections. And I think it's important to appreciate how rare that was at the time for a young woman to make that kind of move on her own. And she would continue to visit Mexico as well as other countries in Latin America throughout her lifetime.
So how did she end up working at UT?
She eventually came back to complete her undergraduate degree and then pursued her master's in Mexican history with the famed Professor Charles Hackett. She ended up teaching public school along the way to cover her tuition and expenses. And by this time, UT had an established Latin American collection. The university had purchased the foundational Genaro Garcia collection, which was sold to the university by Garcia's heirs in 1921, hence the Benson Centennial in 2021. And historian and civil rights advocate Carlos Castañeda, whose name you might recognize as being on the main library, the Perry Castañeda Library at UT, he was hired to manage that collection and to add to it, turning it from that singular special collection of materials primarily focused on Mexico into a Latin American collection covering the entire region.
And when did Nettie Lee start working with the Latin American collection?
Castañeda actually left the university in 1942 to head the southern headquarters of the Fair Employment Practices Commission. So Nettie Lee, at the urging of her professors, filled in for him in managing the collection. And when he did return full time, he came back to UT to work in the history department, not in the collection. So Nettie Lee stayed on full time with the collection until her formal retirement in 1975, which is when the Latin American collection was named in her honor. And actually, as a side note, the collection itself was in the UT Tower for many years until 1971, when it moved to where it is now, the southern end of Sid Richardson Hall. And that move was part of the growth of the research complex around the LBJ Presidential Library. So that library was built with the idea of having other research institutes nearby. So the Latin American Studies Institute and the collection moved to the east side of campus in 1971. So she did have a chance to work in the building where it is now for a few years before she retired. And in fact, she didn't actually leave in 1975. She kept an office on the second floor for many years after her retirement. So the collection really was tied to her in her entire career.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that first, that the collection was Oh, well, that the collection was in the tower and that she actually ended up working in that building. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And then, so when we started talking, you said that Netili was a force of nature. So what do you mean by that?
Well, whenever I speak to people who knew Netili, and several of them are still around, to a person, they describe her as both tenacious and fierce in her commitment to her work and as someone who possessed an infinite intellectual curiosity. She was certainly unparalleled in her knowledge of the collection. Those of us who have had the good fortune of stewarding what she created could only dream of knowing the collection and the details of it the way that she did. And she was the expert on the collection, in part because she used it as the basis for her own research and teaching. So she actually earned her PhD in Latin American Studies at what was then ELAS in 1949. So she was actually Dr. Netili Benson, with a dissertation on post-independent Mexican federalism, which was published, I believe, first in Spanish in Mexico in 1952. She taught graduate classes in the history department and then also in what was then the graduate program in library science. And by all accounts, her students both feared and worshipped her. They often commented about her generosity of time and expertise, but also of her exacting standards. And she had a reputation for demanding close reading of primary sources, which of course came from the collection. And she insisted that her students approach their work from what she called the Mexican point of view.
Well, I love to hear that she was very strict about working with primary sources. I'm sure if there are any historians listening,
Netili Lee, they
know what that is.
Yeah, Netili was a historian's historian, that's for sure.
Yes, it sounds like she was. And the other thing that is interesting is that she insisted that her students worked from, well, taking into account the Mexican point of view. Can you elaborate about what she meant by that? Or what do you think she meant by that?
Sure. I think she was keenly aware of the challenges of writing the history of a country that was not her own, and she wanted her students to be intentional about that work as well. And of course, she was situated in Texas, which, as we know, used to be part of Mexico, obviously, and she had a desire to contribute to the narratives of Mexican history in a way that was true to her sources, and perhaps distanced from the dominant narrative of Texas history, which, of course, is not necessarily told from the Mexican point of view.
Yes, so that in itself was an innovation in the historiography by Netili and other historians of her generation. It is very interesting because she was well known in Mexican academic circles. And so I wanted to hear more about that relationship with Mexico, about how she was received by her peers and others in my home country.
Absolutely. From everything that I've read and heard, she had a personal relationship with Mexico, and it was the country as a whole was very close to her heart, and she was well respected, as you have mentioned. She was well known and respected in academic circles, but by everyone she knew there, not just academics, including book vendors and people she had met through her time in Monterrey and travels for her own research, and then over time acquisitions for the library, some of which she secured with her own money. She never had children of her own, but had close relationships with her nieces and nephews, one of whom is still in touch with us at the library. And he has wonderful memories of going with Netili on road trips through Mexico as a kid. Can you imagine what an adventure that must have been for a kid at the time? When I speak with him, I get the sense that he wasn't very old, and she just piled him in the car. He gave me the sense that his mom wanted him to get out of the house for the summer, and so he would pile in the car with Netili, and they would hit the road to Mexico. And so she felt very, that just says to me, she felt very comfortable comfortable and happy in that space. But anyway, she loved Mexico and the feeling was mutual. She certainly had close relationships with folks at Colmex, the Colegio de México. If I'm not mistaken, the librarian who was the head of the Colmex libraries at the time was a good friend of hers and I think came to UT. And she also had close relationships with folks at UNAM. And in 1979, after her formal retirement, Mexican President López Portillo actually awarded her the Águila Azteca, the highest honor awarded to foreigners from Mexico.
And my alma mater is El Colegio de México, and I was pleasantly surprised the first time I came into a classroom in Sid Richardson Hall to find a signed letter. It's a strange document because it's a letter, but it has a photograph of Daniel Cosío Villegas.
Yes, yes.
The founders of El Colegio de México, dedicated to Nettie Benson. And he writes briefly about their friendship. And I also remember seeing some editions of her work on Mexican federalism that were published by I don't remember.
Interestingly, when her publications were often reprinted, well, I don't know if it was often, but at least her more well-known publications were reprinted in Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, in the 90s. And those were published by the Fondo de Cultura. So it's interesting that her work has had that staying power. And she was close with several folks at Colmex. And yeah, where in the library did you see that letter from him and the image?
So it's in the second room. It's not in the Hackett room. It's
okay.
in the other classroom. It's with a collection of posters that are about joint UT and Mexico conferences about Mexican history or Mexican politics.
Nice.
So it's right there. And so, yes, it was strange because I felt like Daniel Cosío Villegas was following me.
Following you. And I, if I'm not mistaken, his name is on the library at Colmex now, right? Like it's named after him.
Yes. Named after him. And it's, it's a library that has a comparable spirit because it's an open stacks library for students. And that's rare for Mexican universities.
True. And I'm proud to say that our relationship with particularly the library, the Benson's relationship with the library at Colmex remains strong. Miquela Chavez, who is the current director, is a wonderful friend of the Benson and has really done some wonderful things to showcase the collections at Colegio de México in the digital era. So I think he would be pleased and so would Nettie Lee.
Yes, it is the case that the friendship continues and the collaboration continues. I'm sure that she would be happy to know that. I want to talk a little bit more about how she managed to do all of the things that she accomplished, because she did her own research, she taught, and she transformed the Latin American collection into a global scholarly destination. UT, instead of Denson, became a global scholarly destination thanks to her.
You know, it's an interesting thing to talk about in terms of, you know, how did she actually do the work? She was certainly helped by the fact that the university saw value in Mexican and Latin American studies due in large part to its geographic location, and she also grew into her role in the post-World War II era and the emergence of the Cold War, which, as you know, was a booming time for area studies in general. Her acquisitions budgets were never large, but she did have the support of faculty and administration for growing the collection, and I've heard anecdotes about then UT President Harry Ransom having feelings of dread when he saw meetings with her on his calendar because he knew she was coming to ask him for money for the collection and he wouldn't be able to say no. And I think she was able to get what she needed in opportune moments. Although It's worth noting that she never received funds for her own research. And I read an interview with her recently where she said she didn't prioritize that because she didn't want to give them the chance to say no. And I wonder if she made a calculated decision that when she went to administration for money, she prioritized the collection, which is pretty amazing, I think.
Yes, I think it's quite remarkable because as someone who has conducted research in libraries and archives, I myself and most historians never actually build a collection or managed one in the same way as Nettie Benson did. So I'm really curious about her process, about how she actually built the collection.
I too was interested to learn more about her methods and her approach, how she actually went about transforming what was mostly a special collection into a world-class, multifaceted library with a massive circulating collection. You know, and now we have over a million volumes in our circulating collection. Ultimately, I think she demonstrated that there's no substitute for boots on the ground in Latin America or wherever the focus is. She believed the best way to do the work was to, as she put it, show up and look. For her and this is true for us still, personal relationships are so crucial. And this was the only way to acquire things like ephemera, political campaign literature, and other things that tend to fall outside of what we think of traditional publishing, but are often the most valuable to historians such as yourself. And this, of course, remains true for international and area studies across the board, as well as community-centered collection building in local contexts. You have to show up. You have to be there. You know, Nettie Lee was also instrumental in growing Latin American collections at institutions throughout the United States. She was among the founding members of SALAM, the Seminar on the Acquisition of Latin American Library Materials, which is a professional organization that is still alive and well, started by historians and librarians for the purpose of finding ways to gain access to Latin American research materials. And as part of that group, she was the face of the Latin American Cooperative Acquisitions Program, which was an effort to secure imprints from the region for U.S. institutions. And in the 60s, she spent time traveling on behalf of the program, particularly in South America, to Ecuador, to Peru, Chile, Bolivia, Colombia, and other places to buy materials for UT and other member institutions. And by the way, before she undertook that trip, she went to see, I believe it was Harry Ransom, and said, it could have been the university librarian, but I think it was Harry Ransom. And she said, okay, I have X amount of money, I think it was $20,000 from this consortium to buy materials for what could be considered the national institution. Can you do the same for Texas? So they matched it. So she bought for UT and then other libraries throughout the country. So her work actually allowed many university libraries in the U.S. to expand their own Latin American holdings. And the arrangements she made on that trip and on subsequent trips with book vendors, they still shape our acquisitions today. She single-handedly convinced more than one Latin American book vendor to transform their business model to serve the U.S. market. And some of those businesses still work with us today.
That's really incredible and remarkable that she had these skills as a business person, even though this is an activity that is not for profit, but you have to have some sense of what is out there and how much you can pay or negotiate. But also by building personal relationships, there was she and other librarians were also sort of part of a gift economy, because I heard that she acquired some materials through exchange with institutions in Latin America. So it was a mutually beneficial relationship. It's not just that the U.S. librarians going out and just buying materials, but there was cooperation too.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. She started an unparalleled exchange program at UT, partnering with educational and government and cultural institutions in the region by the hundreds. Those institutions could select items that were duplicates or out of scope at UT in exchange for Latin American publications, such as, you know, government reports, exhibition catalogs, the kinds of things that are more difficult to get through traditional vendors. Publishing houses. I mean, the variety and the scope of the exchange partnership was actually quite amazing. And at one point, over a third of the Benson's acquisitions came through this exchange program. And she had a team that helped her manage that work. And in fact, I do want to point out that as superhuman as she was, Nettie Lee didn't do all of the work on her own. Over time, she built a team of expert bibliographers and librarians and archivists, as well as students who kept the machine of the library running. Some of those staff members were with us for decades. And in fact, just in the last 5 years, we've experienced the retirements of the final Nettie Lee holdovers, and it really was an emotional time for the library, that sort of turning of the page. But they had a tremendous loyalty to her and to the collection and to the team that was built to keep it growing and keep it moving.
Yes, so this is very important to highlight, because Nettie Lee Benson was an institution builder, and not just a researcher and a remarkable figure, a charismatic person who accomplished things just on her own. The people who sometimes, some of the work that we sometimes forget when we honor the legacy of someone as important as her, this work, being a teacher, of being a mentor, of being a person who shares their knowledge and their capabilities with others, and leaves a legacy behind. Well, that was what Nettie Benson did with the library.
You're absolutely right. And I think the fact that most of the people who came to work in the library stayed for a long time speaks to how she managed things, right? And she attracted folks who wanted to see the collection succeed. And like her, they understood how important it was for, you know, the Latin American studies as a whole.
Exactly. And this is why we can talk about the past as something that was great, but also that's why we have a future as a library, as an institution, and that we continue to build collections that are that keep up with the times, that are a little bit different. So I wanted to ask you about that. We talked about how Nettie Lee shaped the collection and how she was an institution builder, but also the fact that she left these stepping stones behind for others to follow a path forward is very important. So what do you want to say about why the collection is so important today?
Well, I could talk forever on this very topic, so thank you for asking. For starters, I would say it's the combination of the size and the scope of the collection, including our archival and rare materials, that make it important. And we have everything from 16th century maps drawn by indigenous artists, original manuscripts by some of the most influential writers, to over a million books, including the most recent scholarly studies focusing on both Latin America and Latinx populations in the United States. Certainly, one could argue that the very foundations of the collections are Latinx, given the geopolitical and social history of Texas, but the Benson started collecting these materials in earnest in the 1970s, not surprisingly, as a result of activism on campus and in the broader community. And some of those Latinx collections are among our most widely used, including the papers of queer feminist writer Gloria Anzaldúa. So I think that combination of world-class collections for Latinx and Latin American studies makes us unique and relevant. And along those lines, I would highlight two things. First, we are focused on access. And second, representation matters. That is to say, we don't just collect for the sake of collecting. We collect material so that they can be consulted and used by whomever wants to use them. We certainly don't want to be gatekeepers, and our users appreciate that. The newly arrived freshman student in a seminar class has just as equal access to our priceless holdings as the seasoned tenured professor. As you noted, in many places around the world, closed stacks are the norm, and folks who come to the Benson love the fact that they can browse the lengthy shelves of the Benson to their heart's content.
You mentioned that representation makes the Benson relevant. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, thanks for bringing us back to that. Many of the collections at the Benson tell the stories of traditionally underrepresented populations, as you know. Our Latinx collections and our Black Diaspora Archive, which is a partnership with Black Studies at UT, are front and center in that regard, but examples, of course, can be found throughout the entire collection. And in this way, more of our students from all walks of life see themselves here, and that is important work that we must continue. That representation was true to a certain extent in Nettie Lee's day as well. The difference is that now we have many more years and collections under our belts, and we have effective digital tools that allow us to better share these collections with the world so that the reach is much broader.
Yes, I think this is so important because the discovery it doesn't happen necessarily in the catalog. It happens walking around or browsing or asking for more materials than the ones that you originally wanted to see. I want to know, so after Nettie Lee Benson's retirement, several other people have led the Benson, each making a mark on the direction where they want the collection to go, and ensuring that the Benson legacy remains very strong. So can you talk about your role as the head of the Benson during this centennial year? What has this work meant for you professionally?
You know, so many talented and dedicated people have and continue to dedicate their professional lives to this collection. And I'm thinking about Laura Gutierrez-Witt, who was Nettie Lee's immediate successor. She skillfully ran the library for decades. Anne Hartness put the Benson on the map for Brazilian studies. The late Don Gibbs was a master bibliographer. My dear friend Margot Gutierrez, who actually was the one that convinced me to come back and work at the Benson, she dedicated her career to building our Latinx collections. David Block, who was actually a student of Nettie Lee's, helped usher in our partnership with LILAS, the Lozano Long Institute of Latin American Studies, which has been transformational for us. And that's just to name a handful. I've only been here for 5 years, and so I'm well aware of the fact that I have big shoes to fill. But honestly, for me, the centennial, of course, it's an opportunity to look back and celebrate the legacies of Nettie Lee and the other folks I've mentioned. But it also has to be about building for the future. It's important to me that we don't rest on our reputation. That's how institutions decline. There's so much to do that it's often difficult to take time to reflect on the bigger picture. But when I have a moment, even though they're few and far between, to do some of that reflection, I find myself asking the questions that I hope will keep us relevant in the second century. You know, what does ethical cultural heritage stewardship look like for the Benson now and in the future? And how do we best position ourselves, especially our digital initiatives team, to confront that work? How are we responding to Latin Americans' leadership in open access publishing? What are we doing to effectively connect with and support our local community? And how do we best make the case for a model of collection development that continues to make space for so-called traditional analog collections in a digital world? I could go on, but you get the idea. Sometimes, as I sit in what used to be Nettie Lee's office, I wonder what she would think about where the library is today. And I hope she would be proud of what we're doing.
I think she would be proud, and I think she would be very proud of how we have continued to collaborate, not only with Mexico, but with many different countries, institutions, with communities, And this is central to what we do because it's a collective endeavor of librarians, scholars, students, booksellers, and people who collect different types of materials, but also just people who like to read and write and who love libraries in general. So thank you so much, Melissa, for talking to us about the super interesting and amazing story of Nettie Benson and her library.
Thank you so much, Pilar, for having me.
The Benson at 100 is a production of Lilas Benson Latin American Studies and Collections at the University of Texas at Austin. To see relevant images and links for today's discussion, as well as to support the Benson Centennial, visit benson100.org. Music for this podcast was composed by Ola Ola. Thanks for tuning in.